Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be discussing UK markets, equities, as well as some major economic data that we've had out, which is pretty important for the UK economy. And to do that, we're kindly joined once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Good morning, John. Thank you. Good to be back.
So we are in the summer lull at the moment, Alan. If you're looking at the FTSE 100, fairly low volumes. If you're looking at average traded volume, that's to be expected at this time of year. Indeed, we did see some move to the downside in US equities last night. We saw some of the major companies there give up some ground, which did drag the indice lower. But obviously, looking at where those equity indices have been in the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones, it's to be expected that you see a bit of profit taking at some point. Interesting point with US indices that they haven't had a correction of more than 5% for going on nearly 2 years now. So very strong equities over there. So I don't think the red that we saw on the screen last night was anything to be worried about over the pond. Mm-hmm. But Alan, let's now bring things back to the UK. So we've had two particularly interesting instalments of economic data this morning. The first of which I'll touch on very briefly, and that's inflation data. Of course, regular listeners to the podcast will know that inflation is a subject that we have explored in some detail throughout the year, as there were concerns about rising prices and what that means for markets. But we've actually seen for the July data that we saw that fall back down to 2%. So any fears there that we were going to start to see inflation run to the upside have been dampened somewhat there. And I think that's reduced some concerns for people there. So again, we're seeing markets fairly tepid, sort of a response to that data. So inflation data, they're falling to 2% and removing some of those concerns. But one of the most interesting things that we've had this morning, Alan, and it will flow quite nicely actually into our first equity that we're going to discuss today in Persimmon, is the ONS house price data for the UK. So reading this morning, year on year, house prices are up 13.2%. They're up 9.8% since May. We now have an average house price in the UK of 266,000. Seeing a lot of comments that are coming out from commentators this morning, Alan, it looks as though some people are expecting a fall off into the rest of the year. I mean, in your view, I mean, looking at what's out there, do you feel that those views are warranted, and could indeed softness in house prices persist beyond the end of 2021?
That's a very good question, Jonathan. I think to be frank, it's unlikely. Of course, any market no market ever goes up in a straight line. But I think the relative strength we're seeing in house prices will continue. And we spoke about Taylor Wimpey, of course, a couple of weeks ago, who were very bullish in their outlook on the market and the prospects for the market. And of course, we'll come on to Persimmon in a second. But I think what is particularly telling is that in its numbers today, Persimmon spent a huge amount of money on its land bank, adding another over 10,000 plots in the first 6 months of the year. And, you know, that tells you where they expect the market to go. And I think that's probably an indicator that should be looked at by policymakers, because it indicates that the strength in the housing market is expected to continue. There is obviously a shortage in the UK. You know, we're seeing tracts of land that were hitherto sacrosanct as wildlife reserves, nature reserves, designated agricultural land. These are now being handed over with the change changes and relaxation in planning laws. So there is a shortage in housing, and I don't expect any major impact on house prices, particularly also supported by the jobs data that was out yesterday. Of course, we heard that there was an unexpectedly buoyant housing market. The gross recruitment in the 3 months to June rose to 32.2 million, up 95,000 from January to May. So I think the expectations were for 75,000 new jobs to be created. So that's beaten expectations. So really the impact, or the expectations of the impact of COVID on the housing market, on the housing and employment market, I think is far less than people or some people may have thought at the start of the year.
So indeed, I mean, I think there's two ways to look at that. I mean, indeed, there's, you know, if you're a purchaser of a property, we could see some form of a softening given the end of the stamp duty holidays that we've seen, and some of those, you know, sharp gains. I mean, since May, 9.8% increase is astronomical, really, in terms of house prices. We could see a dip in that going forward, but when we're looking at the house builders in particular, and we'll go on to discuss Persimmon, looking at the shares and how they've traded, do you feel that the market are really looking at those companies and thinking, okay, we've had a glut of sales that are going through that have been pushed through for based on the stamp duty holiday? We're now going to probably see a lull in the market. But do you think there's an element now that people are sort of sitting on their hands with house builders and waiting to see how the economy plays out? Because I'm looking here, for example, at Taylor Wimpey, which you discussed last week, currently trading at £1.75. I mean, this year we've seen a high of about £2.17. So, bumper results. Sorry, £2.30 actually was the closing high. We've seen a bumper set of results from those. Do you think that largely the market have priced in the strength that we're going to see in their figures, and really looking at figures next year, they could be flat or even lower in terms of completions and revenue for some of these house builders?
It could well flatten out. Yes, indeed. But certainly, yeah, Taylor Wimpey last week and Persimmon's numbers today. Just looking back on the chart of Persimmon over the past few years, obviously we saw that big spike in February, and then of course it fell off a cliff along with everything else at the start of the lockdown. But the share price has really recovered then now to sort of levels seen during 2018, and we saw, you know, if it replicates that year, then we could well see a tail off in the performance during the second half of the year, as happened. But the fact is that Persimmon, as I said just now, has spent £200 million on its land bank during the first half of the year, added over 10,000 plots, taking its total to 85,700 plots. So that's a big chunk of plots to add to the existing land bank. So obviously Persimmon felt the land that was on offer to them was available at the right price, and they're able to sort of generate their profits on that. But but in terms of its structure as a company, it's already operating on a healthy profit. Operating margins are 26%, which is pretty good. That's at the higher end of the industry average. It's aiming for 10% volume growth this year. It's on target to do that. And of course, it pays a dividend of just under 4%. So had you got in at the start of the lockdown last year, when shares hit the low of 1850, you'd have been laughing. Shares have already hit that high, as I say, of £32 a share. Currently £28 a share. Going forward, we might well see a tail off towards the end of the year, but it pays a 4% dividend, so you might be prepared to get on board, enjoy the 4% dividend, accept any tail off in the capital value as the company pushes forward. There's very little, I think, on the horizon for the moment that's going to upset the apple cart for Persimmon. You know, there are more jobs have been created, more people at work than had been expected. We're coming out of furlough schemes, so the prognosis as we go forward is looking brighter and brighter.
So, I mean, when we're looking at the figures here, new home completions, Alan, for the first half of 2021 was 7,406. And that compares to 4,900 in the first half of 2020. I mean, how much do you think, though, that jump is down to COVID and obviously the slowdown and you know, closure of sales offices that we saw in the first half of last year? And how much of that do you think that it's people really sort of looking at you know, their stage in their lives now and thinking, right, we need to be starting to buy homes, starting to move homes again? And is that a trend that you feel will ultimately support the home builders going forward?
Yeah, I think it will, Jonathan. I mean, in our house, we've got my daughter and son-in-law living with us. They put an offer in on a house, which has been accepted, and they're moving. But they've been looking since the start of the year, and they've had the devil's own job to find the right place, because during the stamp duty holiday, properties were coming on and getting sold the same day. So they've had a really tough job. So there may well be a marginal slowdown, but I think it's just probably to do with the summer and a little more. And I expect in the second half of the year, the sales process will continue. And certainly for the house builders, you know, given the amount of land that Persimmon has acquired this year and is probably still acquiring as we speak, I can't really see anything on the horizon to trip the house builders up, certainly for the next 6 to 8 months.
Indeed. I'm just looking, you touched on the dividend yield. I mean, one thing that Persimmon's always done, yep, is return cash to shareholders. I mean, they've always had very progressive dividend policies, as well as very generous special dividends. Just looking at the most recent payments from them, 125 pence, £1.25 in March of this year, £1.10 in August. Certainly investors in Persimmon are continued to be rewarded with distributions there. So quite a strong set of figures, and indeed they are remaining to return those profits to shareholders. So I think this is something that's probably set to continue with Persimmon, and it's going to be something quite catastrophic, I think, to change the board's policies on dividends going forward. So an interesting set of results from them, pretty strong, and I think that's going to be a good company to keep an eye on for any weakness for an entry going forward on them. So let's now move on now, Alan. So Zenova Group, this is one that's came to the market very recently. We touched on them at the time, ticker ZED. What's the latest from them?
Okay, so Zenova have come to market. They IPO'd at 19p, and the shares popped up immediately on its debut to 23.5, 24p. Slowly drifted back since then on little volume, and I think we can put that down to the summer months as much as anything. So it's got a market cap of around 17 million. So shares have... Shares, as I say, have come back. There was some news that was out at the start of August from the company. It announced its first pilot scheme with Southdown Housing Association. Now, I'll go into that in a second, but I just wanted to go over what the company does again. So Zenova produced a series of innovative paints and renders that are fire resistant, fire retardant, and on its website, zenovagroup.com, you'll find a series of product videos that that manifestly demonstrate just how effective these paints and renders are. And And those have been doing the rounds across social media. They've got a very strong Twitter following. And you can, if you just look at Zenova Group's Twitter handle, you can see a lot of those product videos being demonstrated within the body of the Twitter post. So there's Zenova Fire Paint, and then there's that's Zenova FP, Zenova FX, which is fire extinguisher, Zenova IP, which is thermal insulation paint. A recent tweet showed how container lorries and also old sea containers used in some areas in Africa where the poverty is poverty levels are very high. If these are painted with a thermal insulation paint, they can become habitable, because otherwise the steel construction would overheat very quickly indeed. They also have insulation render, IR, and that's render that's actually applied during construction. So, you know, when companies like Persimmon build these new houses, the render they could use from Zenova would basically be fire resistant. So that's a massively important development and thought, I think, for house construction in the future. And then they have WB, which is wildfire barriers. And of course, we're seeing all these fires burning at various locations around the world due to the increase in global warming. Zenova WB, the wildfire barrier, is already in use in several places around the world. So the company's run by Tony Crawley. Tony's held senior roles in construction and fire safety. He was the managing director of a company called Frippura in Europe and Canada. And prior to that, ran a national electricity contractor with 150 employees. He's also a major shareholder in the company. He had 9% after admission. He owns 5.5%. So it's always good to see a director with skin in the game like that. And indeed, Dr. Etra Albani joined the technical team after he realized the potential of the paint a few years ago. He also is a 5% shareholder. So yeah, so back to the Southdown Housing pilot. It was a pilot scheme to make use of the insulation properties of the render that I've just outlined, and also Zenova paint. So it's helping the Southdown Housing on their properties that or the portfolio properties they have throughout the southeast in Sussex to and they're rendering a property using a pilot scheme. They're filming the process so it can be sort of outlined and used as material to show other companies and other organizations. So it's a significant step forward. It's also a key element in reducing carbon footprint as well, because obviously there's less heat emitted from the house, house contains its heat better. So so there are many factors along the cycle of bringing this new house or completing the new house with the products. So Zenova Group, as I say, currently trading at 19p. That's 19.2p, just above the IPO price. I think it's a fantastic company, and it's really its timing and entry into the market couldn't be better.
Indeed. One with very strong ESG characteristics there, as you've outlined there. You know, there's obviously the the social impact that it can have in Africa, as well as the green energy impact that it can have here in the UK. So certainly an interesting company to keep an eye on there, Alan, with them. I'm sure one that will keep the podcast updated with when we hear some more. So moving on now to the final company that we're going to touch on today, which is Echo Energy, Alan. Now, this is one that we've discussed on the podcast previously. It's one I'm now looking at a market cap of 7 million and sort of scratching my head and thinking what's happened here, because, you know, as a junior explorer that it is, it is actually producing as well at the same time. So that obviously is a real benefit for a company like that, because it does support further operations going forward. So what's the latest been from them?
Echo Energy are a company with a portfolio of assets in Argentina, southern Argentina. They call themselves a cash generative energy company. The company is run by Martin Hull. He's the CEO with over 18 years in oil and gas investment banking and expertise across the chain. And the non-exec chairman at the group is James Parsons, who, of course, is well known across a range of other AIM companies. So he brings his expertise to the group. A board of very experienced non-exec directors also with Dr. Julian Besser, who's the technical director based in the region. So as you said, Jonathan, this is a company that is productive and it's growing its assets. The assets, the asset base is based at the Santa Cruz Sur oil field. It's on the southeast coast at the foot of Argentina, and it's a very fertile region for oil production. Currently, Echo Energy has five production concessions there and is generating an average of 1,700 barrels of oil equivalent per day. So that's the majority of the sales are in gas, and there's a very buoyant gas market in Argentina at present. The sales costs in the market are some $12,300 for a million cubic feet, a million cubic meters, throughout the first part of the year, Echo has been focused on developing these assets. It's got several other wells and assets within the field, and being cash generative as it is now, that cash is being spun back into developing those assets and bringing those further assets upstream. Now, significantly, the company have just released a new presentation, which is on the website. And this, I think, graphically illustrates the cycles the company is going through to firstly produce oil, then add additional oil and cycling wells, a workover program for the existing and new wells, and also new well developments. And basically, it delivers a top right-hand corner graph where the production will steadily increase throughout the second quarter of the year. And given that the shares have come back as far as they have, is, as you say, Jonathan, it's as much of a surprise to me as anyone, because we've now got a company with that level of production, well established in the region, a market cap of under 7 million. If we go back to the start of the year, the company took some very significant steps in terms of restructuring. There was a senior debt facility that was restructured to mature in 2025. No further cash interest payments were due to the loan or to the facility. What it's enabled Echo to do is to husband that cash and focus all that cash on developing the assets at Santa Cruz Sur. There was also a change in the Argentine VAT status, and on the back of that, Echo has been able to reclaim some $1.5 million, which is again highly significant. That money's gone back into restructuring, and of course, it's had a very successful run through the year. So we saw the high in March where the shares touched just under 2p, but here we are now 0.5p. They've just slipped back steadily on the year. Meanwhile, the company continues to produce oil. There's been very little news from the company since June, and I just think this now with this additional production, with the release of this new presentation, I think the company's gearing up for a major publicity campaign during the latter half of the year. And at 0.55p compared to a year high of 1.9p, I think the shares look excellent value right now.
Indeed. And we're certainly just looking at the chart that we've seen, quite a significant drop off there. But I mean, I think we have to look at the reason behind that drop, Alan. And indeed, looking at the debt restructuring, that relieved them of certain cash payments they had to pay, which obviously frees up more for operations. So that was a huge concern beforehand. Mm. We did actually see a very sharp rally on the announcement of that, and ever since it has ebbed to the downside when you're looking at the share price. I mean, do you think that there's maybe a little bit of concern about the underlying assets now from investors?
I don't think there's any concern about the underlying assets. I mean, there are several independent publications that, in fact, there was on oilprice.com, June 26th, there's a big article saying Argentina's oil industry is finally bouncing back and looking at the activity across the country in terms of production and the issues for the incumbent producers and so on. So that article was very positive. And I think it's going to mark a turning point. That's probably why Echo Energy updated this detailed company presentation and put it out when it did. But also from a news standpoint, Echo has been very quiet, so it's kept a lid on stuff since June. And I think, as I say, now going forward, and just to look at the assets the company has in the ground, and there are 1P, 2P, and P50 estimates, reserve estimates. 1P means proven developed and proven undeveloped. There are 3.13 million barrels of oil equivalent thought to be within the five concessions. The 2P, that's total proven and probable reserves, are just over 4 million barrels of oil equivalent. And the P50 is what industry specialists say has a 50% certainty of being produced, is 6.5 million barrels of oil equivalent. So that's an awful lot of stuff in the ground. And if you do the numbers on that, compared to the current market cap and the fact that this is a producing company which is increasing its production month on month, I don't think the shares are going to be at this level for much longer.
Yeah, so indeed, looking at the presentation, it's certainly something that anybody that's looking at Echo Energy should spend a bit of time going through, because yes, if you run the numbers on those reserves and what that could mean in terms of revenue going forward for Echo, it does look like a particularly interesting prospect when you're looking at shares at just 0.55 pence at the moment. So I believe, Aaron, that's on their website at the moment. So anybody looking at...
It is, I'd urge investors to go to the website. It says the investor presentation quarter three 2021. It was put out a few days ago. So I'd urge investors to go and look at that. It really articulates where Echo are in the production cycle and where the upside is going to come from too.
Yes, indeed. And even if you're not looking at Echo Energy shares, certainly there's some interesting notes in there about their production, which will be quite interesting for anybody that's looking at energy production companies. So do check that out. And I'm sure this is going to be one that we discuss on the podcast again, Alan. So just as a roundup now of the equities that we discussed today, first of all was Persimmon, the house builder, with a ticker of PSN. We also touched on Zenova Group with a ticker of ZED. And of course, just then was Echo Energy with a ticker of Echo, ECHO. Alan, thank you very much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Jonathan.
So just as a note, anybody listening to the podcast, do check out the UK Investor Magazine website where you can register to receive our regular newsletter, which do include our latest podcast as well. So do check that out and get yourself subscribed. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.